Hi, everybody.
So in a modern age.
Hi, everybody. Just
in a modern era.
Just a little disclaimer.
With modern technology.
My computer threw an error 13 minutes into this recording that I've never seen before, and I was so terrified and pissed that I didn't care to actually check it out and see what it said. I just like, I was like, what? And then I closed it, and we lost all of the audio, other than 13 minutes, which I'm not going to include.
So we're pulling the audio from the video that I recorded, and
remember
it's
how
gonna
we
be
were gonna
rough.
Remember how we were gonna make videos?
Hey, that's not the time for this.
You're right, it's not, because I actually, as we were setting up, I was like, Jason, why don't we just not record this one, and we can start recording once I move and everything, and so, like, you don't need to record this, and what? And he was like, no, we have to do it, and so for that, I'm very grateful. The end result of what I'm going to say here is that our audio quality is going to be the worst that the show has ever been.
It's abnormal.
It's
lacking.
It will be worse than the audio quality of our first show. It will be straight up potato quality. This is Jason's special, and he feels comfortable with that. So I'm going to let it be. And also, just we were late recording this week anyway, and life is happening, so we don't really have time to redo it. So enjoy.
We're sorry.
Hopefully won't be too painful of an episode. Oh, God.
Good luck.
Oh, God. I hate to even think about it. Anyway,
I believe in you.
Good luck and good night and goodbye.
Welcome to the Not Alone Podcast. I'm Jason Moitoso.
And I'm kind of just hanging out today as Sam Fredrickson.
That's right.
It's Jason's day.
The roles have reversed.
Now, how many times is this? 13?
I don't know, but I'm filling up that lunch menu pretty well on the Jason special. So, is it lucky number 13? No,
it
can't be.
I'm going to check this.
I promise.
I feel like this is very...
We should have had this conversation before.
We did have a conversation.
I mean, yes.
Just not this one. Your last special was the alchemy one, which was good.
That was rough.
It was a good time for everybody.
That was real rough.
That was special number 11. So this is 12.
Oh, we're on 12.
So you're going to need to think about something for number 13. Maybe you could literally just do, like, the number 13. That could work, too. Anyway.
That's not a scary cryptid.
Haunted numbers.
Oh, God. So, the Pokemon letters.
Yes.
Those guys,
yes.
The unknown.
The unknown.
We're going to talk about those,
missing
too?
Missing no.
All right.
And then that song in Lavender Town that makes people kill themselves.
Perfect. Anyway, so we're going to get past that now and refocus, because, yes, it's a Jason special, which is going to be horrible and disastrous like you.
What?
But hopefully we'll come out learning things.
That's not what I said.
Which is my only goal.
All
to
right.
Learn things or disaster?
Disaster.
Perfect. Well, I'll be talking about sinkholes.
Damn.
And if that's not big enough hint for you, today we're talking about cave monsters.
Caves, holes in the ground.
Scary, spooky stuff.
Holes in the caves in the ground.
And what causes them, what lives in them, and why they're scary.
And who loves them?
I don't think really... anyone loves them besides for maybe scientists.
There are people who absolutely love caves, who would go and live in a cave if they could.
Scientists.
Yeah.
Geologists.
Weirdos.
Anyway, so as I was browsing the internet trying to figure out what we're going to do today, I did come across one weird cryptid.
Okay.
And I think it was like the cryptozoology subreddit or something. And
always a valid source of information.
The name itself just grabbed me enough. Cabbage Town Tunnel Monster.
Ah. Ooh. It's like a Cabbage Patch Kid gone bad.
That's kind of what I thought it was at first, too. Not particularly, but it is kind of wild.
Okay.
So, the Cabbage Town Monster is actually in Toronto.
Is that... what's Cabbage Town?
I didn't
is
quite
this a
get it.
Slang name for Toronto.
I want to say it was probably the
Toronto!
Area. I'm assuming it's probably the area of Toronto, but it was only called that because of the singular newspaper heading that called it that.
Oh,
so,
okay. All right.
I guess Cabbage Town is probably like.
You found a newspaper.
Yes.
Nice.
There was a newspaper.
Nice.
It was printed.
I love finding newspapers.
And it was back in the summer of 1978.
Oh. I thought you were going to do that, like, Springsteen thing. It was the summer of 69.
It's definitely not Bruce Springsteen.
It's not?
No,
who is that?
It's not the boss. It's, Kenny... No, not Kenny Loggins. That's that dangerous, Danger Zone. I know
I
it.
Thought
I,
it was Bruce Springsteen.
I own the song.
All this time. You own it, or it's in your Apple Music library?
Summer of 69, I own it.
Wow.
I bought it way back. Way, way back.
Wow. That reveals a lot to me about your tastes.
Bryan Adams.
Bryan Adams? Who is that? That's wild. All right.
An older dude.
Well, yeah, obviously.
at this point in time.
I could have sworn that was Springsteen this whole time.
No, I mean, if you're thinking, like, maybe Glory Days.
Here's the other thing. I don't listen to Bruce Springsteen, so I don't know.
You don't
know
listen to The Boss?
I don't know how I would possibly know whether or not it was him.
There's a whole movie about The Boss.
I'm sorry.
About going to go meet The Boss.
Can we not...
In the power of music.
Why are we talking about The Boss?
Because you brought up Summer of 69 and think it was a Springsteen
That's
song.
That's true. Who's The Boss? Is it...
Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
Is The
Boss. Now that makes a lot more sense to me. Let's go... I'm sorry for derailing us yet again.
Yeah, that was pretty quick. So, well done.
Let's move forward.
All right, so anyway, the summer of 16...
It worked! It worked!
The summer of 78 in Toronto, Canada, there goes... God, you really screwed me over. All right, so never mind. Okay, here we go.
Okay, focus.
All right. In the summer of 1978, a 51-year-old man by the name of Ernest... Supposedly, that's the name that was given in the newspaper.
Ernest goes to Cabbage Town. Ernest fights a monster.
might not be both.
Yeah.
Could be. Went in search for his lost cat.
Oh, no.
In the evening.
Oh, no.
Now, he did find a mysteriously low tunnel entrance near his apartment complex. And depending on which story you read, he heard cat-like sounds of distress coming from it. Or he didn't. Now,
okay.
Ernest, with his trusty flashlight, decided to venture into the very low little cavern tunnel. And once he got in there, he made his way down the dark tunnel about 10 feet before he came across something that scared him.
Why, in the story that doesn't involve the cat noises coming out of the tunnel, why did he go in the tunnel?
Maybe he knows his cat, and knows his cat likes to go down dark, scary places.
He just said, this is a tunnel.
I mean, it could be down there.
All right. It's believable to me. I know cats.
Yeah, right.
One time I had a cat. Her name was Daisy, but then we found out it was a him. Daisy escaped from my house, and she went through the cat door into my...
That's not escape.
No. She escaped from my house. I don't even know how she did. And then she went through the neighbor's cat door, three doors down, and just, like, hung out. Now, these people had, like, six cats, so they didn't even realize she was there at first. And then they, like, came home, and the husband, telling me later, was like, I literally did a double take and was like, honey, that's not our cat. What's going on here? So I'd like to think that this is the spiritual ancestor of my cat. Running out, getting in trouble.
Perfect. Lovely.
What did Ernest see in the dark?
I don't know, but he did not see his cat, which was not named.
Okay.
Instead, he saw a thin, 3-foot-tall humanoid being covered in gray fur.
Oh my god.
With slanted, orangish-red eyes.
So he did see his cat.
I hope not.
But just like the cat from the Cats musical cat.
Oh god. Yes.
That's what this
The was. Uncanny Valley Cats.
So, okay, alright.
And he froze. Staring at it. Okay.
Okay.
What do you want to digest there? You're thinking.
So it's 3 feet tall.
That is what he claims.
Slanted orange?
Orange-red eyes.
and gray, did he say hair?
Gray fur. It's what's been claimed.
What the heck? Okay.
All right. That's not where things get super weird.
Isn't it?
It's weird.
Isn't it?
But then, the creature hissed out to him to get out.
Oh, no.
Get out.
Oh, crap. Oh, man. I scared myself.
And then it escaped into a side tunnel. Ernest naturally got out, turned back around, and left.
What a coward.
I mean, that sounds kind of scary, so I don't quite blame him.
All right.
And of course, naturally, at first I thought it might have been an owl. But,
hissing,
gray.
Red eyes, sure.
Red eyes, shine, that makes a lot of sense. Makes sense. Hey, you said it here first. But owls don't really, like, walk normally.
Or speak English.
And that was another thing that really kind of prompted my attention. The ability to imitate speech in animals is quite rare. Weirdly enough, porpoises are pretty good at it. Some apes can mimic a few words, but not a lot. And of course, the ones that we all know, parrots. Parrots are really good at mimicking sounds. But nothing that fits in the Toronto, Canada region. I mean, yes, it's by Lake Ontario.
Much less the description. Not even the region.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, we have something that is completely out of the ordinary from what should be there, doing things that are extraordinary as well. That is the last, it's the first and the only time that we hear of the Cabbage Town Tunnel Monster. The story was written in the Toronto Sun in August of 1978.
Okay.
And at that point in time, there was a concrete collapse closing off the front of the tunnel.
No frickin' way.
Yes way.
Wait, okay, so did they report on it when the collapse happened? Did they report on it? Did they report on it and then there was a collapse? Did it happen the same, like, day?
My assumption is that the reporting and investigation was done without the knowing of the collapse.
Holy crap.
Which I also thought was kind of weird. You'd think, like, maintenance crews would probably make sure that a tunnel easily accessible by small children would be fairly safe.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there.
Now, the building itself didn't, like, go down. It was concrete in front of the tunnel.
I'm glad that you bring that up, because one thing that I didn't know about Toronto until I went through this Cryptids fandom page is Toronto's actually a city that is heavily tunneled. There's tunneled walkways to travel throughout the city, but there's also tunnels for sewage because Toronto is actually built off of a series of different rivers as the town expanded. Those rivers basically got pushed underground through sewage tunnels because it was too difficult to reroute the rivers another way or completely to eradicate them due to the natural geography of the land. So we have essentially a big tunnel network underneath the city that does go out to Lake Ontario, and that is also naturally occurring. So, good news. Now we have at least some sort of evidence that some sort of river system and a river monster, quote-unquote, could have evolved in this kind of area and been a part of this area. But, again, this is the only description of a monster that we really have from the tunnels, and there was no real river monsters to begin with when the area was first settled. It's not like we have a rogue drowner running around. It's not the case. There are, however, river spirits common in the local native religions of the area, but that doesn't really have any kind of description similar to the beast that we saw.
This is probably the scariest and most terrible thing I've ever heard. This is blowing my mind.
Now, the interviewer from The Sun, Lori Goldstein, also believes that Ernest was not making it up. His wife reported that he wasn't, like, a heavy drinker, and that he did seem genuinely startled and scared once he had gotten home.
Okay, so there was this one time, it was probably the worst day of my life, when I looked up at the ceiling.
I feel like you've told me this story before.
I looked up at my ceiling, and I found a spider that was literally, and people aren't going to believe this, it was, like, this big.
Okay.
It was the biggest spider, save other than, like, a tarantula, that I've ever seen in real life. I killed it. I grabbed out my ladder. I ascended the ladder. The thing looked at me. I was frozen in fear, and then I finally was able to overcome and kill it. It was terrible. And then, for the next, like, 5 nights, as I closed my eyes to go to sleep, I would just imagine the spider on the headboard, on the fan, on the covers. I almost couldn't sleep because
it was haunting you.
So how the hell did Ernest
go to sleep?
How did he even survive?
I don't know. I would have been distraught not being able to find my cat.
This is like, well, that's true too. And when I did lose Daisy, I did literally spend like hours in the nighttime looking for her in fields. It was a wonderful, terrible time. But this is exactly what I'm talking about. When I say like, whether it's Baron speaking to me in human speech,
yeah,
or the sight of a dogman outside of my window, like, these are the things that if they happen, I'm just, it's done. I'm over. I can't move on. And I can't, God bless you, Ernest. This is amazing.
Yeah, so there's not, like, a lot of follow-up interviews with the man.
I should think
There's just not a lot of extra information about the Cabbage Town Tunnel Monster. Or, again, any other sightings, which I thought was a little strange, because typically, once a news article comes out, we do get, quote-unquote, other sightings of the beast.
True.
This didn't happen. I don't know if stuff is different in Canada, but
if people aren't so quick to jump on
the tunnel monster, wasn't really seen ever again. It was just, again, a one-off. Now, Lori also interviewed a few maintenance workers from the city as well, and they believe that they've never seen anything like that, for one. And for two, the common things that do end up in the tunnels are things like raccoons, and also, of course, beavers.
Sure.
And they also had this really sweet quote that I'm going to snag real quick. Let's see. One of the workers said, "People who work on the surface just don't know what it's like down there. It's a whole different world." And it is. I mean, for one, let's break this down. It's a low tunnel. Ernest, from what it sounds like, had to at least bend down to enter. And then, of course, it was also very dark. And he was already nervous, at least, or worried for his cat.
Agitated.
So, at this point in time, seeing something that throws him over the edge isn't something that I would be super startled to hear about. I think, personally, it might have just been a raccoon. Because raccoons do some really weird grabby stuff with their hands.
They do, that's true.
And I would not be surprised if a raccoon was walking around on its hind legs and just doing weird stuff, because I hate raccoons. But he never said anything about, you know, the classic raccoon bandit eye patch,
mm-hmm,
or anything like that. That being said, again, dark, tough to see much of anything. He did point out gray fur, works pretty well on a raccoon basis, but I'm not 100%. I'm more like 56% at this point about that idea. Another idea that was floating around was maybe it was an escaped circus animal or an escaped zoo animal at the time. And that was actually pretty easy to figure out, because the only thing that ever popped up of a Google search in that area for missing zoo animals,
mm-hmm,
1978, was apparently capybaras. Which,
okay,
if you don't know what a capybara is,
yeah,
it's one of the largest rodents in the world. It's native to South America. And it also lives in the wetlands, which would kind of make sense if it's in kind of a watery tunnel.
Do capybaras hiss?
Not that I'm aware of. I would expect more like a guinea pig squirrel out of them than a hiss. Absolutely would not expect to say get out. And maybe
right,
that is also an effect of the tunnel and how acoustics work and things like that, that maybe that's kind of what he was expecting to hear from something like this. And of course,
who knows what activates in a man's
mind.
If
it's not a native animal to the area, and if it's not an animal that escaped from the zoo, there has been speculation that it was an alien.
Right. So that was actually going to be a question that I brought up. Was there any, like, UFO activity during this time? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of.
Did you look?
Not really.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
Well, what I did find was that there are ideas of, again, kind of very David Icke-ish reptilian, like, aliens living beneath them.
Right.
And I don't quite understand why an alien would be naked in a sewer tunnel in Toronto.
Yeah, well, you're not an alien, are you?
I'm not.
You don't know how they work.
But if I did go to an alien planet, the first thing I would do is not take off my spacesuit.
Yeah, but what if its fur is a spacesuit? What if it is something that was bred to be able to withstand our atmosphere?
I mean, okay.
You don't have an answer for that.
I don't have an answer for a semi-intelligent being that lurks in the sewers and has only been spotted by mankind once.
Yes. Yeah, that's because it's doing its job.
Okay.
It's doing it quite well.
So, what you're saying is that there's a vast network of other underground tunnels.
It sounds to me like...
under Toronto for a civilization that we have yet to interact with, and they don't grow crops, they don't eat anything besides for, I don't know...
waste?
Sewage. Which is not necessarily good for you.
Okay, so obviously that is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yes. It also does sound kind of shapeshifter-y, doesn't it?
Like Skinwalker-esque?
Yeah, kind of Skinwalker-esque shapeshifter. Huh. Hmm. Anyway, okay.
I still don't see much of a point for it, right?
That's fair.
Is that comparable to say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
It is a pointless creature. I agree.
Yeah. But it made me think about more things. And the biggest is, like, why do we associate caves and tunnels and mines with being the lairs of evil or monstrous things that will scare us or either kill us? I mean, even most recently for myself, watching Sabrina, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, like, a mine shaft is the gateway to hell.
It's terrible.
But why is that? Why do we associate these things with it?
Well, what's really interesting is that you do have in beliefs all over the world, but I know primarily, or not primarily, but I know prominently in multiple, like, First Nations peoples here in the United States, you have a very close link between the underground and human beings emerging from the underground. You know, like, we came from there.
We came from the earth.
We came up out of it, fully formed as a people group. And then you have interesting reversals of that idea. Notably, granted, it is a Doctor Who thing, notably on Doctor Who, but I think there are other, like, stories of people making contact with beings that talk about the exact opposite, where when humans emerged on the scene, either literally coming up from the underground or evolving out of everything that happened there, that there was something else that preceded us that then we forced underground and continues to live down there to this day. But it is. It's mystical. It's otherworldly.
Right. I mean...
it's a doorway to the supernatural.
Right. But, I mean, it's not like our ancestors didn't use caves to be home dwellings as well.
Yeah.
It's just more recently that caves have been associated with scary things.
Yeah.
And some of the most scary things that I can think of, one of my fears primarily is I don't like the dark.
Yeah.
I don't like the darkness. And a lot of people also are very claustrophobic. And caves tend to mix both of those things. It's also very different than what we're used to as far as landscape and environment-wise. Usually fairly damp if we're looking at an actual cave. And you've got stalagmites and stalactites. Those are very weird-looking things. They look like the teeth of a monster.
They do.
Right?
That's true.
So I think some of these play into why caves are scary. I think it also comes down to the fact that caves are dangerous. It is not easy to traverse them without getting lost, without falling, getting hurt.
I know, every...
Turned around.
Every few years, there's, like, a story of somebody who has to be rescued from a cave.
Yeah. So having the cave, or something that lurks in the cave, be the boogeyman of your children's tales make a lot of sense in order to keep the kids at home and not venturing where they shouldn't be. Much like will-o'-wisps in swamps and other deadly things that are outside our normal construction of what civilization and what life should be and what life is.
Xibalba, of Mayan myth, it is the entrance of it is a great cave that one descends into and then enters the underworld of Xibalba. I said a while, and by a while I think I mean literally about 2 years ago, that we would do like an episode on Mayan myths, and then we didn't, so maybe we'll do that eventually.
That'd be cool. That'd be a lot of fun. One thing as of, to note as well is that I also looked up some of the more common animal fears. What are the scariest animals?
Okay.
Some of the most popular ones are things like snakes and spiders. Those are pretty obvious. Same thing with sharks. But also bears, crocodilia, bats.
Anglerfish.
Anglerfish are just spooky looking things in general. Yes. And a lot of these things also call caves their home, to some extent. Bears are commonly associated with caves. I mean, there is literally a species called a cave bear. For Americans here, most of the time when we come across a bear, it's going to be a black bear. They're fairly common across the entire U.S. One unfortunate thing that I kind of discovered through my research is that there's been a spike in bears getting mange in Pennsylvania.
Oh, no.
So I think that might also lend to some weird cryptid sightings. So if there is a large, haggly-looking cryptid in Pennsylvania, it might be something that has happened to a poor black bear that has lost most of its fur and then is just trying to do its best. But I don't think that is our creature.
No.
By far.
No.
I don't think it is whatsoever, at least not in Cabbage Town. But from there, when it comes to primal fears, again, these creatures are associated with caves pretty heavily.
Bats,
so we kind of have this pre-existing condition to think that these things are scary and caves where they live, where they're from, are also scary. Now, don't get me wrong. I hate venturing into a cave and then coming across 10 dozen wild Zubats, but it happens. I've broken down a few different of these cryptids in a couple different ways.
Okay.
Primarily from actual body plans.
Oh, okay.
Some of the more common ones are bat-like, which makes a lot of sense, and I'm going to talk about those a little bit more in depth. Humanoid, which is kind of illustrated by our Cabbage Town friend here. And then there's also ones that are more like chimera-esque creatures, amalgamations of different things all rolled up into one. Those are more closely related to old myths and legends, less of cryptid sightings, less of more recent things.
As well as, of course, genetic testing gone wrong.
Naturally. In fact, my favorite of those is the Grootslag.
The Grootslag? What is that?
Well, I say him. I'm glad you asked.
Okay. All right.
Apparently, it is a legendary beast that lives in the northern province of South Africa. It has the head of an elephant and the body of a giant anaconda.
Oh, yes. Yes,
we've
I've
spoken
heard of
this. About
this yeah.
once before.
When did we talk about this?
A long, long time
okay.
ago. Maybe during Dragons? I don't recall. Anyway, apparently, it lives in a giant pit of cave systems, and it lures in people and also elephants to feed on.
That's
the mythos behind it is that this was one of the first beings ever created by the gods before man was even thought of, and just still primordial ooze at that point in time. It was also more clever than a man as well. And the gods themselves realized that such a beast that could strangle and kill other creatures and swallow them whole was probably a bad idea. So they hunted down all the Grootslag and separated them, giving their attributes to two different animals, both the elephant and the snake.
Okay.
But there was one that got away. Now, this is the one that lives in these 50-foot deep pits and is essentially the terror that lures people in.
Is this thing sighted very often?
Not recently.
No. Okay.
No.
All right.
Most recently, there was a European explorer that went looking for it, I think, in the early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And he mysteriously vanished.
Probably fell into a hole
on a camp.
Poor buddy.
Yeah. Broke his leg, died.
Oh.
Most likely, that's probably what happened.
You hate to hear it.
Yeah. But the Grootslag is a really cool creature and a really cool legend that goes to show that, again, caves are the home of a different type of boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
That we probably aren't used to today. Today, if I want to go to a cave, it's usually a tourist attraction of some sort. I'm not going spelunking anywhere that I don't know. And I'm sure you probably aren't either, unless this is your hobby.
Spelunking in unknown places.
Cool.
Very specific.
That sounds like a blast. You probably know what you're doing. I don't. And most people didn't know what they're doing.
I don't know that I've ever even been in a cave, because they scare me.
I've been
much.
In caverns, which are basically
Ooh.
Caves. My mom did give me the option of, like, rappelling into the cavern through... Okay, I guess I do have a little bit of claustrophobia. Through the cavern, through this very, very small hole. It was like, breathe in, breathe out,
yeah.
Go.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of a cave. And I was fine with not doing that. And it's just terrifying. Right? I mean, it's fun, but it's scary. But I'm going to leave the Grootslag and other, like, chimera mix of creatures
mm-hmm.
alone for a bit, which
okay.
I would assume
that's fine.
That a lot of those creatures were probably found as the skeletal remains of multiple creatures that might have gotten injured or also, too, fell down into
mm-hmm.
some sort of pit in a cave, and those bones got mixed together. And whoever came across them was like, oh my gosh, what's this crazy thing? Obviously, it lives in the cave here, yada, yada, yada. And I think that's probably how most of these legends kind of got started in some way or another.
Pits are
hazardous.
Well, they're hazardous. They're also a veritable gold mine when it comes to, like, archaeology and biological archaeology and stuff like that. Because, yeah, unfortunately, things just fall in there.
Yeah.
All the time.
Stuff falls in, and then it can preserve. It's great.
It is.
Unless it's you.
Such as the case of the Homo naledi, I think also in South Africa, it's in somewhere in Africa, where it's the first recorded possible site of intentional
burial.
Yeah, by hominids.
I remember coming across that somewhere on the internet. It was super cool. It was in a natural forming cave.
Yeah. And the theory was, because they excavated the cave, they didn't find any other bones, they didn't find any other predator bones or prey bones. So the theory was that as these hominids died...
They were physically moved there.
They just took them and put them down the shaft and were like, goodbye, see you on the other side.
It was also like a really weird cave as well. Like,
mm-hmm.
it was very tough to get into if you weren't, like, purposely trying to climb through it.
Yep.
So... I think that also lends to the fact that it helped keep predators away, and that's maybe why the cave was selected for its purpose.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. But yeah, like, we have been doing this for a very long time, and caves goes to show that this is almost a sacred-esque
mm-hmm.
place, but it's also a place of death.
Yeah. Which is why it's sacred.
And gives us some food for thought.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other two categories of cryptids is what I really want to look at a little bit more. So, humanoid cryptids that live in caves, I'm going to hold off for
Thank
a
you.
Small period.
Maybe you could hold off forever.
We're going to start with our bat-like cryptids.
Okay.
And generally speaking, those are going to be bat monster creatures that are oversized. Some of the larger ones, some of the more common ones are, say, having a wingspan of anywhere between 12 and 10 feet. I guess 10 and 12 feet, that's more of how you do that.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, a larger wingspan than what is commonly known. As of right now, the largest bat is the gold-crested flying fox, which is from Indonesia. I believe it has a wingspan of almost, like, right around 6-ish feet. So this is a big creature, at least when it's fully, winged out. Full span. I'm going to say full span.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because of, you know, members' tissue and stuff, like, it's connected. But that's about as big as bats are, and as big as bats get,
so
for the most part.
You only have to worry about a 6-foot long wingspan.
Yeah. So as
that's all.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Sleep but it's well. Fruit, and it's adorable.
It is adorable.
It is adorable.
They had some at Disney World at the in the Animal Kingdom.
Yeah.
And they were dope.
But they're also huge. I mean, you can see them just, like, hanging out on branches, and it looks like you're trying to tan a piece of meat or something.
Yeah.
It's just wildly big. And I think for some of these sightings, the Aul is one that is from Indonesia. So same area. This one is the one that has about a 10-foot wingspan. But it is just a very, very large bat. It was witnessed by, again, another European explorer. And the conditions were unfortunate enough in which it's tough to say probably how big it actually was.
This was a cryptid.
This was a cryptid.
Was the explorer Ivan T. Sanderson?
Not this one.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
He's in West Africa. He's next.
Okay, all right, good.
I actually failed to write down the name of this gentleman.
That's fine. He's lost to time.
It wasn't probably that important.
It wasn't a big deal.
If you do know who it was, and if it was that important, all right.
Google it.
You did it. Extra credit for you.
We'll give you extra credit points on your assignment.
Anyway, it was named after the sound that it produced.
What was it?
Aul. It's A-H-O-O-L.
All right.
Is apparently the sound that it made. That being said, like, I feel like it could probably be more of a fruit-eating giant bat because it's not making the chirping sounds of echolocation, which is what we find in the much smaller bats that are insectivores.
Do the bigger bats not use echolocation?
I'm sure they do to some extent. But they primarily just work off eyesight.
Did you know that humans could do? They can do this? They can train themselves?
Yeah.
That's insane.
With either the tongue or a clicker.
Yeah.
The sound has to be perfectly reproduced every time.
Yeah.
So a clicker is the most common. And it's not nearly as good.
No. But it's still just amazing to me.
Isn't it?
That you can learn how to do this. You can train yourself.
Yeah.
It's wild.
And giant bats aren't the only seen in Indonesia, but they've also been seen in West Africa, South America. The Aztecs believed in a death bat, which was a giant bat that was basically the keeper to their underworld. And also, there was a sighting, supposedly, in Afghanistan of a giant 5-foot-tall bat woman thing.
Oh.
I don't know how true that one is, mainly because I think the primary information from it was off of a Lost Tapes series, which, if you don't remember what those are those really weird reenactments of cryptid sightings.
Okay.
From, like, the early 2000s.
Alright.
But that was an incident in Afghanistan in 2001 that a few U.S. Marines experienced and claimed that a giant bat attacked them to some extent.
Kamazots. Kamazots of Mayan, again, death god, bat god, hanging out in Shababa. He was a big old Batman.
Big old Batman.
Big old
and
Batman
I mean,
Kamazots.
Again, we go back to fears. Batman is right up there. I mean, it's fear of bats.
It's true.
You know, like,
he terrifies me.
And he, again, like, created that as his own thing, but it shows this very real fear of them.
Mm-hmm.
And why do you think people are afraid of bats?
I think that when a bat flies into the wall of your childhood cabin and starts
That's right.
squeaking at you, it's natural to be afraid. Honestly, I think there's a few different things. One, it's a bird, but it's not a bird. And I know
right.
that sounds stupid, but I honestly think that's a big part of it. It's
yeah.
like, we know what's up there. What's up there are birds. That's not a bird.
Right, right.
And then, like,
it's outside our preconceived notion of what
mm-hmm.
should be.
And then, like, with vampire bats specifically, like, their little freaking noses.
Their little noses and their little lips.
Yeah, but other normal bats, and maybe even vampire bats too, are quite cute and adorable.
Oh, I think they can, I think they are a little fluffy little snuggy buns of flying death joy,
mm-hmm.
Of darkness. But I think also, too, what comes down to it is bats are kind of similar to us in a lot of ways. In fact, for a very, very long time, scientists believe that bats evolved from a very primitive primate.
Oh, really?
It wasn't until recently that they actually completely moved over to a different overarching like category of mammals.
Okay.
But yes, for a very long time, due to a certain series of bones that they exhibit in their skeletons, they lined up very, very similar to the formations of the bones in the skeletons of primates from a very, very early age. Yeah. I also think, like, it's scary because their wings are leathery, membranous,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of irks us in a way.
Mm-hmm.
That and their squeals, and again, they're out primarily when we're not. Being nocturnal beings, we don't get very good sight of them.
Mm-hmm.
All we hear are these chirps and these giant masses of flocking bats coming out of caves, and that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
To some degree. Another thing is that bats, unfortunately, are very common at being able to spread disease.
Oh.
Human to bat, or bat to human transfer of disease is pretty commonplace, and it probably was even larger so in older times. And to some extent, we probably recognize that in our early civilizations, that bats carry disease, including, of course, rabies. That's one of the bigger ones.
Mm.
Now, the reason why that's so tragic is that I think I brought it up earlier, that bats are actually really communal animals. They huddle together, they groom each other, they also support each other food-wise, if need be, if there's a sick bat in the colony,
and
they'll aid the other. Yeah, basically. But because of that high community aspect of these creatures, they also spread disease a lot quicker through their numbers, too. Which, again, kind of leads to the fact that, or the idea that bats spread disease quickly, and that's why they're also probably called flying rodents all the time, too. Because they are these unsightly little things that bring disease and death.
That makes sense.
And themselves are another embodiment of it. Going back to our cryptids, Ivan T. Sanderson did...
Ivan T. Sanderson...
did witness a giant bat while on the hunt for a different bat. He was actually looking for a hammerhead bat, which is a species of fruit-eating bat. It just looks like it has a really big...
This is a real...
big maw. Yeah.
This
it has
is
a
real
big,
bat.
Big, big
okay.
old mouth to it. It's like... it's not like a hammerhead shark. It's much more like its head and mouth situation is like the square end of a normal hammer.
Oh,
makes
interesting.
Sense? It's
yeah.
more like, it's more that. It's more like blunted,
okay.
just kind of big face for some weird reason. That kind of a bat, hammerhead.
Huh.
But he did claim to see the Olatitao? Tatal? I can't pronounce it. Anyway.
How do you spell it for us?
Olitiau.
Olatitao.
Yep. He claims to have seen that.
Olatitao.
While he's in the forests of Cameroon in Western Africa.
Okay, and what was that like?
In 1932. Very similar description to the giant bat that we witnessed in Indonesia as well.
The Alu?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Just a very upscaled bat. And apparently it gets its name based off of a demonic mask that the locals create.
Sick.
So, yes, bats and demons, yippee. Aren't they fun?
Yeah, they are. They are.
And I'm going to move now to the other type of cryptids that we're talking about. Did you have any closing questions or remarks as far as our flying bats?
I would just like to question and ask whether or not you could maybe not talk about humanoid beings in caves.
We're getting real close to not having to do that anymore.
Why do you mean?
Because
how
we're going
to
talk about humanoid beings in caves. And then we're going to not talk about humanoid beings in caves.
I'll just sit here quietly.
Perfect. That's what I wanted. Okay. So, the other thing real quick with bats, is that for the majority of bats' existence here on Earth, the oldest bat skeleton we found was about dated to 52 million years ago. Still had claws on its digits.
Wow.
Which is really crazy. Also still flying.
Hanging out. They've been around.
Yeah, but for the majority of bats' lives in general and their existence, they've been insectivores of some sort. Most likely pushed into that niche of nighttime activity because, well, birds already kind of conquered the skies. So you have to adapt the best that you can. Nighttime just seems to make a lot of sense in that regard. Only really fruit bats get to be the big sizes of flying foxes and what we think of as big monstrous bat things.
Wow. Nature's amazing.
Nature is pretty amazing. But that's all I really have to say as far as bats go. And then with bat-like cryptids, I would probably assume that, if anything, these are probably stories spurred on by, unfortunately, rabies-infested bats that are becoming hyper-aggressive towards people that are near their homes. That makes the most sense to me. That, in low-light conditions, the claustrophobic conditions of being in caves, probably lends to the idea that these creatures were much larger than what they actually were.
Aggro bat, if you will.
I like that.
Thank you. It sounds like a magic card.
Now, we're going to put the wings aside for a bit.
Okay.
And now we're going to talk about the other subcategory of cryptids that I really wanted to poke and take a look at is the humanoid style of cryptids, which these are much more recent as far as their claims and sightings have gone. I think probably one of the earliest versions of these are knockers, which are very much so like other versions of the Fae, and they come from Welsh and Cornish peoples, believing that these creatures live in mines. They wear the same garb as miners do. They tend to play mischievous tricks and take things from the miners themselves, whether it be equipment, candles, things like that. But probably the most decisive feature of knockers is that they are either knocking to warn of an imminent cave collapse, or their knocking is them actively trying to create cave collapses.
A correlation versus causation sort of thing. I see how it is.
Exactly. So I guess it really depends on what side of the system you're on.
Well, I'm definitely pro-knocker, whatever that means.
Okay, well, great. Because they are just another variation of the Fae that we've talked about before. Very similar rules apply to them as they do being around other Fae of not to curse. Also bringing some sort of food or leaving food that you have yet to finish for them as well as a basically like a peace offering system. And also a system of providing good luck to the miners as well.
Mm.
Those traditions got brought over with Welsh people in the 20th century as well, or 18th or 20th, 19th or 20th century, and got localized in western Pennsylvania, where knockers just became known as Tommy knockers, but essentially the same exact thing, where we have these small peoples living in the caves and the mines, and either causing doom to miners or trying to actively warn miners of them.
There's a Stephen King book called The Tommyknockers.
I'm not surprised. There's also a movie.
Is it about this?
I did not look into that.
I've never read the book. I just know
I saw clips existence. For the movie, and they looked more ghoulish than anything, so I completely sidestepped it. It was like, I don't want to know anything about this.
All right.
Otherwise, from there, also, more recently, besides for creatures of the Fae, we have things like our Cabbage Town monster.
Cabbage Patch Kid.
Exactly, where things that we see in these dark, scary places tend to be humanoid-esque and look more like us, something that is relatable, something that we've seen every day, because when you live in such a civilized area, when you go into these dark places and you don't know what creatures look like, you don't know what certain things are, you associate weird shapes and weird things with something more similar to us.
That's true.
Another cryptid, of course, going back to the reptilians, there was supposedly a reptile humanoid spotted somewhere in Asia. I did not give this too much credence because there were quote-unquote photos, but the lighting looks horrible, and the face in it was... You had to make quite a few different stretches in order to really believe what they are going for. If that does interest you, feel free to look it up. It happened fairly recently. I want to say it was like 2011, 2013.
I'll try to find this and put it in the blog post.
But it just was not enough there to really go off of. And again, the picture quality was so bad that there didn't really seem much to warrant.
If there's no pictures, it didn't happen. If the picture is too good, it didn't happen. And if the picture is blurry, it didn't happen.
Exactly. So, give me a body.
Give him a body.
Why is that so hard?
All right.
So I think, yeah, cave monsters and cave beings and caves and in general are all these kind of workups of what we are essentially tuned to think as scary and as creepy and as dangerous, which they are. One thing that comes to mind as far as like a gate to hell is concerned is that there is a story of priests being able to take animals into a cave in Turkey, and there was a mist in the cave and all the animals would perish. The priests would enter and they would not die. They'd come back out and be perfectly fine as some sort of version of a miracle. Now, this goes to show just, like, what possibly is so... This is really scary about caves. This happened roughly around 2,000... A little over 2,000 years ago. Like, 60 BCE.
Okay.
But what was really happening was due to geothermic events in Turkey, carbon monoxide was seeping through the rocks and into the cave. And because of the cave's upper limits, upper ceiling, it basically pooled in the cave and did not escape, so that when you walked down into the cave, that mist was actually just a buildup of fog that was purely carbon monoxide, which, of course, killed anything that was breathing through it. As far as the German team of scientists that basically figured this out, they assume that the priests, to some extent, were making a show of it and knew that the mists themselves were deadly, and thus if they're just able to hold their breath long enough, they weren't going to be exposed to carbon dioxide poisoning and they wouldn't die. Thus, it's a miracle.
This is a very interesting account,
but I think it's interesting primarily because, again, this is a very early account of caves being dangerous, and they are absolutely dangerous for several different things, one of which is, again, like, weird gases build up from geologic events, which is obvious now from this story.
Mm-hmm.
But also, caves are very dangerous because they tend to be around a lot of heavy volcanic activity. And most cave-dwelling creatures in mythos tend to be the ones that cause earthquakes. They cause volcanic eruptions to happen. There's still one lizard cave creature in Peru that apparently can survive the extremely hot heats of lava and thus lives in the caves near volcanoes and helps erupt and causes those things.
Mm.
Which is very cool, very interesting, very scary. But it goes to show that caves for a long time have been, for us, a dangerous place. And unless you know what you're doing, you probably should not be entering. Unless you have someone there that does know what they're doing. A very just outright dangerous place, even though it doesn't seem like assumingly dangerous. So what if, going back to our Cabbage Town kid, what if he did exist?
Okay.
What would be the likelihood of it? What would it actually be like? I think primarily, if we're going to be looking at the Cabbage Town monster, probably from there, it would either be some sort of at least partially amphibious creature.
Okay, that makes sense.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was more like a giant frogman. I would lean heavier into believing that than I would an alien or some other weird, mysterious cryptid that just kind of hang out in tunnels.
Okay, so you're down with the
Toronto
frog.
Toronto hasn't been that long.
You're down with the frog people.
Potentially.
Potentially down with the frog people.
I mean, it's not like the Dover Demon that we talked about before,
yes.
Where it is potentially some sort of weird amphibious creature. Mm-hmm. Amphibians also live in damp, dreary, dark caves. Some of the coolest ones are very pale and don't have eyes.
Yes.
Which is also incredibly creepy, because creatures that do live in caves are very, very specialized, and also typically small. Caves, believe it or not, are not great resources for creating a nutritional environment. The lack of sunlight makes it very tough for anything to really grow down there. So what does typically happen is that if there is going to be some sort of growth, it usually is based off of some sort of geothermal heat, which is what happens in the darkest depths of the oceans. Or it's based off of some other nutritional implantation to it. The first thing that comes to mind is bat guano.
Mm-hmm.
Worms are pretty commonly associated to being in bat guano. Same thing with bugs and other beetles, millipedes. Essentially very small scavenger creatures that are lower on the ladder as far as what we deem as predatory creatures. These are the creatures that break down more waste and eventually turn them into dirt, like worms. Which worms are supposedly causing sinkholes. Giant worms all over the place. Worms and snakes.
Wow.
I left those out mainly because the real reason why sinkholes happens is just essentially water underneath the earth eroding away limestone and sandstone deposits, creating a cavern, and eventually once the sediment gets too loose, then everything sinks in.
It just all goes in.
But before we knew that, these look like giant holes of some sort of snake-esque worm creature.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. So it makes sense that some weird worm thing is trying to swallow your house whole.
Like an Alaskan bollworm.
Exactly. Just like an Alaskan bollworm. Why do you think I brought up those stalagmites and stalactites?
It's terrible.
It's the teeth of the bollworm.
It is.
We should all be very aware of that.
I'm very wary.
Otherwise, if we're also thinking, for our Cabbage Town kid, the other potential, case of what it might be is maybe another mammal that has taken to a more aquatic lifestyle, like a beaver.
Okay.
Because beavers, of course, still are furred. But potentially maybe something that is wading through the water. It may be a top-down hunter. Or maybe a nighttime hunter of some sort. Obviously, if it has big slanted eyes, it uses it for something, probably low light vision. But these kind of cryptids would have been found some other way too.
Okay. So it's in your opinion that the most logical or the most evolutionarily possible remnant of a cave creature would be something that was very pale, with no eyes, that was amphibious, that... But it probably couldn't get very big
because of
the nutritional
restrictions. Probably also like a filter feeder type animal.
What do you mean by that? What's a filter feeder?
So, filter feeders, just like an actual ocean sponge.
Okay.
They essentially use very low... activity, like caloric activity, in order to essentially filter nutrients out of water.
Interesting.
Just like a lot of shrimps are actually like fan shrimps. They have fans instead of claws for hands. And they use those fans to catch algae, catch small particles of nutrition, and then just eat them.
Wow.
So I would expect something of that nature, which... A lot like whales. The biggest whales on Earth that feed on krill, they're essentially filter feeders.
Yeah.
They're not actually putting in too much effort to quote-unquote hunt.
They're just like opening their mouth.
They're just opening their mouth and swimming. Whale sharks do the same exact thing. So that would be my assumption as far as like how could something get to be 3 feet tall.
Okay.
In a very like low density as far as like caloric benefit, subnutritional area.
So it would have to be very light.
It has to be light. It would have to have, which makes sense if it's thin and gangly, because If you are a filter feeder of some sort, then you don't need to be strong or fast. If anything, you're going to be more sloth-like, where it doesn't particularly matter how quickly you're moving. You just essentially need to have the components, the tools, really, to catch the and filter out the foodstuffs that you're going to be eating. Which is also weird because Ernest made no real description of, like, what the jaws looked like, what the head shape really was, just that it was humanoid.
Yeah.
He didn't talk about the hand shapes, nothing like that. Ears. But that would be where I would lean to some sort of weird sewer creature, is something that potentially was a filter feeder of some sort, and then probably would have either a, like, weird mouth to incorporate and filter feed, or have some sort of appendage to do so.
Okay, so let's go back over the ideal tunnel creature. Very light, and if it's going to be tall, it has to be gangly and weird. It has to be slow, like slothfully slow. It has to be very pale, probably almost translucent because of how light and not dense it is. And it has to have no eyes and a weird mouth. This is terrible.
It doesn't have to have no eyes.
This is terrible. No, but it probably would.
The fact that the Cabbage Town Tunnel Monster had eyes goes to show that it was, at least for the most part, to some extent, living in an environment in which it had low light.
This reminds me a lot of the frickin' terrible creepypasta that kept me up for so many nights of The Rake. Did you ever come across
that?
No. Please don't.
Great, I won't.
I'm literally going to die. Thank you for this special. You've killed me.
You're very welcome. Okay. Anyway, again, going back to our Cabbage Town Tunnel Monster.
No.
Obviously, that weird amalgamation that I just created doesn't exist. Not that we've at least found, and I don't think it ever will. But it does go to show that all creatures are essentially tuned and created by the environments in which they live. I would not expect any kind of truly cave-dwelling creature to ever get larger than, say, maybe like that 3 foot. I wouldn't expect any more size. Just because caves are, again, they are not a very nutritionally dense ecosystem to survive in. Most cave creatures are incredibly small, especially ones that are cut off from all outside visible light. And those are the ones that are typically translucent, because it doesn't matter what your skin looks like if you have no sun. Mm-hmm. And also, typically those are the ones that don't have eyes either, because again, what's the use? And they're fun things to talk about that creep everyone else out.
If you watch Planet Earth, there's a caves, I think it's Planet Earth, there's a caves episode, and they show, like, this little salamander dude who's, like, see-through and has no eyes.
Aw, cute little dude.
It's terrible.
And I think ultimately what caves and cave creatures exemplify is the hypothetical idea that there is a primal fear, one fear that leads to all other fears, mm-hmm. which is the fear of the unknown.
Yes.
You and me, we see each other every day. Well, not every day, but you know what I mean.
Not anymore.
We see other people every day. We grow accustomed to patterns of what we expect to see. And then when something is outside that realm, to some extent, once we've hit the unknown, that's when things get scary. That's when things get weird. And that's where monsters tend to live.
You always fear what you don't understand.
Yeah. And that's my tale of the Cabbage Town Tunnel Monster. And also, a brief look into other cryptids that call caves their homes.
Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. It scared me.
Do you have...
It's disturbed me.
Any questions for me as far as cave creatures go?
What's your favorite cave creature?
Besides for the Grootslag?
Yeah.
And
preferably like a real one. But like a mythological one's fine too.
I actually really dig millipedes. Another thing, of course, that just seems incredibly alien to us is just...
Why do they need all those feet?
Exactly.
No, you don't know?
I have no idea. Because evolution told them they did.
Evolution wanted the feet, and evolution got it.
One notable exclusion is giant spiders. There are absolutely tales of giant spiders in the mythos of mankind living in caves. I excluded them simply because our environment does not allow for spiders to get that big.
Why?
There's not enough oxygen in the air. So insects essentially breathe oxygen through pores. They don't have lungs. So it is essentially osmosis.
Okay.
Of oxygen into their bodies via pores and into their bloodstream that way. Because of that, they rely, purely their size, relies off of how dense the oxygen is. Because it takes less oxygen to function a small body versus a large body.
Now I'm just thinking about that spider again that invaded my home. Did you know Muse, the band?
Yeah.
That used to be good and now they're not.
Supermassive black hole.
Yep, used to be good and now they're not. Their guitarist and lead singer, Matthew Baume, he is of the opinion that spiders are aliens.
Naturally.
That came from the stars.
They're just aliens that came from the sea.
Spiders? Well,
you looked at crabs?
Didn't we all come from the sea?
Yes.
Okay. But crabs especially.
Because water helps for very fun chemical things.
I hate this. I hate this. Can we stop talking?
Yeah, isopods.
Can we stop talking about crabs and spiders and arachnids in general?
I'm done. We can turn on the lights. We don't have to venture into dark, scary caves.
We've been recording in the complete dark this entire time. None of you knew it. Unless if we ever actually released this video.
Now I'm just like, oh man, now with night mode on my camera.
Yeah, you can see all the terrible things in the dark.
And I think that's, like, the scariest thing is that we tend to try to find shapes and figures in the dark. Going back to the caverns that I visited as a kid, when you got down to the very, very bottom, it was like, I don't know, 1,000-step staircase or something to get down there. The tour guide, they did this thing where he was like, okay, we're going to shut off all the lights. Now, if you see colorful shapes of people, don't be alarmed. That's very common. It's just essentially how your eyes are trying to adjust rapidly to the change in light, yada, yada, yada. But it also was that weird embedding of preconceived notions of what I should see as soon as lights turn off. And you see spots to some degree. I never saw human figures, but it is again like one of those things where we kind of want to be scared.
Yeah,
that
that's
way we want something to be there, because I think wanting and knowing something is there is better than unknowing.
That's true. No, I disagree.
So anyway, if you have seen some weird cave cryptids or are an avid spelunker, let us know.
Let us know.
Tell us all the scary stories, because I'm sure it'll freak us out.
Yeah.
But that's all I have as of today.
That's all Jason has.
In our creepy cryptids that live in tunnels.
There we
and
go.
And mines and caves. And basically the underworld.
Another cryptozoological Jason special put to bed. This is where you do your best work. This is a cryptid realm, I think.
I mean, I like the cryptids.
They're good. Now, you were, just as a callback to last week, you were going to talk about Thunderbirds.
I was.
And then you decided not to talk about...
I love the car. It's a great car. I'm kidding.
You decided not to talk about Thunderbirds. I have decided to talk about Thunderbirds. So we're going to do that next week. And then, after making everybody wait for about a month longer than I promised...
Even myself.
Then... we will journey into the Crowley Zone, where again, we will reside until we pass away from natural causes. Many years.
Natural?
Natural causes.
I don't think they'll be natural.
Oh, Doctor Who again. And No, I don't think I've got anything else either.
Well, in that case, Sam, where can we find the podcast?
You can find us on... You do it. It's your special.
Gotcha. Well, you can just Google us.
No, you have to say the thing.
You can also join our Facebook page. Remember, you are not alone.
No, remember, we are.
Remember, we are not alone.
Because it's a community. Something.
A community for the strange. He's got it. Sam, what is your Twitter handle?
It's Beer Lord Elfbane. And yours is
Mighty Moit.
Mighty Moit. And we are Not Alone Pod, and we are also on Instagram. I forgot to do a post for last week's
for episode, some reason.
It's fine. Instagram's good. We're there.
Because we're spooky.
We're there. You can find out how to support the show by going to patreon.com/notalonepodcast.
See, you just got so much experience.
You can do everything that you want to do. You can be everything that you'd like to be. Don't let anybody tell you different. Jason, I think I did it last
You absolutely
week.
Did it last week.
So now, because it's, especially because it's your special, go ahead.
So remember, whether you're diving into a cave for hidden treasure, or you're running for your life, being chased by a giant bat,
Ooh.
You are
not alone. Spooky.